You're listening to a Stranger podcast, www.thestranger.com.
What do you know?
Never gonna know, never gonna know.
Thank you, dear listener, for downloading yet another Dear Science podcast. This is the long-delayed podcast, and with me today is David Schmader, and...
Hi, science.
Hi. We're going to talk about how to make things glow green and how to win the Nobel Prize in the process here. So the Nobel Prize in chemistry this year went to three gentlemen who basically worked up how to steal from jellyfish. So I don't know if you've ever looked. I'm crazy. So I will go on the back of the ferries when I take them in Puget Sound and look out in the wake to see at night in particular to see if there's any flashing of bioluminescence. So these all these little aquatic organisms, particularly in the Northwest for whatever reason, that will fluoresce green, make their own like little light. So they're kind of like fireflies, but in the ocean. Some only fluoresce when light is shown on them. Some can make their own light. And quite a few decades ago now, someone got the idea to take from a jellyfish that lives around Vancouver Island, steal its green protein. So this is kind of like, this is a sort of a jellyfish that really embraced 80s fashion and is sort of stuck with it. And so it, if you shine sunlight on it, it glows like day glow green, like as green can be, brilliant, brilliant green. And so it'll take, so what fluorescence is it's taking the energy from blue light. And the protein inside the jellyfish kind of rattles around a little bit. And then after a few minutes, it decides to give off this energy back as light, but green light. And so it steals
a little
bit.
It's a decision?
It's kind of – I'm being a little bit maybe more – I'm feeling kind of bad for the McCain campaign right now. The McCain Palin ticket feels like they deserve something. And so we're going to talk about this in sort of like the intelligent designer sort of thing.
We're gonna that be is sitting very around, nice of you.
And we're just, this is just out of sympathy here. We're gonna speak of this in these wonderful deterministic ways.
The left is capable of sympathy.
Yeah, yeah. I'm tolerating their position. In the most tolerant way imaginable. So the so partly what's going on here is, right, you can't make more energy, right? So blue light has more energy than green light that has more energy than red light. So it takes blue light and turns it into green. But it's kind of useful in its own little way, because if you want to go and track stuff inside a cell or do a whole bunch of things, it would be nice to have this protein. And so what these scientists did, and each did a little bit different role, and there's one guy who actually got a little bit cheated out of his award because he just more or less found the jellyfish. But they isolated the genes, so the recipe to make this green protein, and then started putting it in all kinds of things. So you can put it in human cells. Humans, as far as I know, don't glow green. I haven't, you know, haven't met that many people, but I haven't met anyone who
you do it in the dark, don't you?
Yeah. So this green. Oh my god!
I know that was terrible. I know. But it would make a good bumper sticker.
That would be. So
anything,
you know,
doing it.
So I 10 years ago I started in labs. This is one of the first things I worked on, is green fluorescent protein. And one of my friends who loved going clubbing was like begging me. She's like, "You can make things glow green." She's like, "Can I get a little bit of it and like rub it in my eyes so when I'm at a club my eyes will glow green?" And I'm like, "It would probably work." And no. I can't promise your eyeballs won't fall out in a short period of time. And it was quite a bit of an argument. She said if I was her friend, I would do it. Which is this always the best way to get a scientist to do anything. Were my friend.
She's not still a friend of yours, is she?
She is, but she's on a different continent now. So, hello, Felicia. I hope you're doing well. I hope your eyes are still white. Right? Like, and so the idea is though, to do exactly that, make like human cells glow green. And so you shine blue light on them, and then you have a bunch of filters and look for the green light afterwards. And this is actually, sort of thinking about it, it's amazingly useful. So if you want to track cells or see where they go, you just look for the green ones. And like a lot of other ways to track cells, you don't have to kill them. You can do this on living cells. And so you can follow this around. And then people got the idea, you know what would be really cool? To have mice that were green, like an entire mouse, that every cell in the mouse was green and glowed green. If you take like a black light, which is the kind of light that you need, it's, you know, a little bit higher energy even than blue, and shine on the mouse shines back at you green. Eyes, tail, paws, fur, everything. And they did. And so there are entire colonies of glow-in-the-dark mice that run around and scamper about. And then the same.
They're just there to be cool?
Well, no. I mean, so think about it this way. If you want, you can. This is kind of. Now, welcome to the grim land of science. So let's say you want to do a transplant study, see if you can figure out someone who has bone cancer or a bone marrow cancer, try to do a bone marrow transplant. Well, wouldn't it be nice to be able to track the transplanted cells from the cells that are in the organism with cancer? So you have mouse, you can give a mouse bone cancer, and then you try to do these transplant studies by using the green. You take the cells from the green mouse as the donor, and then you can track them. You don't have to worry about trying to figure out where which cell is from whom, and so those sort of studies. That's why it's sort of a green mouse. I mean, we'll stop there at the level of there's probably more things involving blenders than was probably tasteful to discuss on even on a science podcast. But that from that sense, it's useful to do it. I could talk about a grim experiment. You could do it that.
No, it was fine.
David Schwader, who can sit through Showgirls repeatedly, is looking fairly panicked at this point.
Yeah, I most wanted to know if the green mice were collector's items or if they were indeed science.
Interesting. I think you're not allowed to let these out as pets. I think I've often wondered how many scientists have sort of quietly taken them out. I'm going to give you another little hint about mice is that they're really easy. If you have two mice, it's really easy to make a lot of mice very, very quickly, even green mice. And so I would imagine there are a couple scientists out there in the world with glow-in-the-dark mice that they have in, a little aquarium with a little fish light. Because fish, right, a lot of fish fluoresce like this. That's why fish tanks tend to have those little blue lights. So now you have a mouse that will fluoresce green at night, in the middle of the night. And I imagine that would be a kind of a nice party thing to have. But I do not believe that is available for sale at this point in time. And the same people who clone Dolly the sheep in Scotland have made, green pigs and green sheep and green dogs, I think. I'm not entirely sure, again, if these are available on the pet market, but go and search on the internet and see what you can find. Do not email me to produce a green mouse dog, make your chihuahua even more exciting and twitchy. I will not do it. I am very, very sorry. This is one of the things. So one of the things that I had originally done is rip apart HIV, make it so that it can't make people sick anymore, and replace the guts of HIV with green fluorescent protein. That way you have a virus then that you can, won't make anything sick, won't kill cells, but will make them green at your whim. And I've done this. I've made many, 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 many things green. Hopefully not my lungs. This is my major goal in life, is to die GFP negative as opposed to GFP positive.
What does that mean?
Green fluorescent protein positive means the cells have the gene.
Is green lung a big risk for the science community?
I'm beginning to wonder. These are all very, very new technologies. The day is young. But I would imagine some of the things that I've seen in my years in the lab, yes, there are probably many people with blue lung and green lung. So what else can you do with this? So say if you don't want green or you want more than just this one color, you can mutate the protein and do a little bit of directed evolution in a dish. Again, a little bone to our intelligent design colleagues here. This is actually intentionally where you're trying to manipulate a protein by selecting. So you have a green one and you let it mutate. You put it in cells that mutate their DNA a lot. And then you look at them and you pick out the ones that are a little bit yellow or a little bit red. And then you let them grow up in a whole plate, mutate them again, and then pick the ones that are a little bit more red and a little bit or a little bit more yellow. And so you can actually drag the gene and make it so it fluoresces at different and different colors. And so there are red ones and yellow ones and green ones and all and blue even. And so what you can find are plates where this gene, all these different families of genes, all based on more or less the same kind of gene. They've been taken from a couple different kinds of jellyfish or a couple different kinds of aquatic organisms. So it's been a couple start points that have gone on to make all these colors. But you put them in bacteria, and then the bacteria glow. The bacteria usually don't fluoresce. And then you can actually streak on a plate and make a little pretty beach scene. And last I checked, you can actually see one of these on the Google page or the Wikipedia page for green fluorescent protein. Someone has been witty. In the scientific-y, nerdy way, and made a pleasant little beat scene with different glowing color, green or blue and yellow and red bacteria. But you can even – and so then beyond that, so people have the other idea. Okay, let's make these the president was very concerned. Our president will only be president for a very short while longer. And I'm going to solace myself in that fact. Yeah, exactly. Unless he declares himself president for life. And if that case, then your science podcast will be the least of your concerns. But we're going to assume that American democracy will continue. And he's concerned about the man-animal hybrid. So let's talk about one of them. And so one thing you can do is you can take this protein from jellyfish and you can attach it to a human protein and then follow where it goes in a cell. And so if you want to look and see where there's little roadways inside cells, and then there's little proteins that walk on the road. And no one really quite understood how this happened or how quickly it happened. And obviously it needs to happen because the cells, some of the cells in your body are incredibly long. So the cells that make your big toe move start way, way, way up in your spinal cord and go all the way down your leg. It's a single cell that goes all the way down to your big toe and makes the muscle in your big toe twitch. So how does the cell move proteins that it's making all the way up in the very, very tippy top in your spinal cord all the way down to your big toe? Well, with these motors, but no one really understood how they work. So they combined a motor protein with green fluorescent protein. And now the little motor protein glows green. And they took a neuron from, not from human, but from, I think from a mouse, and followed the little motor proteins as they walk down the cell. And you can actually see how they go and how often they kind of jump, fall on and off the road, and how quickly they go and how many of them there are and all of this. And so these proteins are amazingly useful. And it's like this little discovery, little idea, and then it sort of radiates out and bounces around in science. And this stuff has only been going on at for the most in earnest for about 10 years, maybe 15, where if you're talking about the very early, early experimental beginnings of using green fluorescent protein, which is another way of saying that most of this has happened under the Bush administration, which has not been a good time for science by any conceivable means. How's it been for you, David? Have you enjoyed the Bush administration?
No, I have not at all. It's been harrowing, and I'm looking forward to talking about anything except that.
We can think about this almost like a post-mortem here.
I know. Well, that's where I was going to ask you next. That the men who won this phenomenal award for doing this came out quickly for Obama.
Yeah,
is the punchline.
Yeah, it was sort of the joke. They get the call from the Nobel Committee that, congratulations, you've won the Nobel Prize, the highest honor in science for chemistry. Well done. What would you like to do next? And it was not Disneyland. It was a call to be like, is it too late to be added to the Nobel Laureates for Obama list, which is a long, long, long list.
I didn't know about this list prior to.
No, you can search for it online and you can see it, and it's a pretty astonishing list of people, and it's kind of nice because you can actually go and see what all these people did. I mean, so this is another way of saying this is what it takes. This is the level of impact you have to get a Nobel Prize. And I've heard a couple of my colleagues in the science community bitching that this wasn't quite enough.
Really?
Finding green fluorescent protein was, whatever. It's not as big of a deal as it should have been. Like, this was just a minor, technical trick.
Has it added
trick.
Up to something major yet? Or is it just...
It's certainly... I mean, I think it was a justified choice. I think it's been important enough. But people's argument is this is sort of like a scientific parlor trick. And it doesn't really reflect a deep new understanding about how the world works. And then you get into this sort of snippiness in the scientific community that the Nobel Prize for Chemistry, like, chemistry is done. And therefore, they can give it to stuff like this, which isn't quite as exciting. This is not the Nobel Prize for Medicine or one of the ones where it just felt like this is more of a frontier in science. It's sort of the same argument that there's not as much left, there's not enough big jumps to be had in physics. Mm-hmm. And this is a whole, like, very, very sort of inside baseball sort of argument in science. But no, I think this is meritorious for it. But this is sort of the basal level. There are many very, very exciting things that sort of have come out that have gotten Nobel Prizes in medicine and in chemistry. And then, of course, we have our Nobel Prize winner in economics, which I've had, but I think we've all had learned a little bit more economics in Krugman. And he's by no means a... I imagine his name is on that list for Obama as well, pretty swiftly.
Yeah, and mention this, but there probably aren't many Nobel winners for McCain, Palin. Probably a lot for Palin.
Yeah, I mean, Palin really does inspire the intellectual elite as love. I think she would really also approve of that, which kind of loved me. One of my – this is totally non sequitur, but one of my favorite fundraisers of the entire election season was Planned Parenthood's one, where they would say, if you donate to us, we'll send a postcard to Sarah Palin saying that you donated in her honor for for family planning. And I approve that message. I encourage you to donate to Planned Parenthood and have them send a postcard to Sarah Palin.
I know now that I've got you here. I wish I had the timeline of Sarah Palin in the final months of her pregnancy to see if you could tell me what the hell she was thinking with her travel plans.
Oh, I wrote a column on this, and I wrote a couple blog posts on this whole like fiasco. We'll go into this now, though. Now that we've settled that Nobel Prize winners are
they deserved
flaming,
it.
Flaming angry liberals who would prefer Obama be president, the other professor. Yeah, Sarah Palin's pregnancy. Or putative pregnancy, right? So remember, there's all these controversies. First was it her daughter's baby, and this is why she had these crazy travel plans, and was like, or and then what was the other one that she wanted this to end in a horrible, horrible
because
disaster,
she could not
miscarriage.
Abort a baby that she knew was of compromised health, right?
Yeah.
Because of her belief, so she was praying God would abort for her through an airplane.
Yeah, exactly.
That seems fair.
I mean, again, these are speculation, but
this is absolute fact.
I will go on the authority of David on this point. But no,
my cousin is a flight attendant, and she said,
because hearsay, totally irrefutable. So there are a couple things here. The big column I run, I was very proud of this one. Is the whole point is prenatal testing isn't just to do then selective termination of the pregnancy. Because one of the ideas is the only reason why you do testing is because you would then intentionally terminate the pregnancy and then go back and try again. And the idea is if you have advanced maternal age, you should be checking this because the probability goes up in a given birth being trisomy, having chromosomal abnormalities. With old guys, it's actually different. You tend to get small. So if you have tired old sperm, you get different sorts of problems. So the whole story that, you know, men can father children into their 80s or whatever is true, but also is true in the same way that women can have children into their 40s in the sense that the risk of genetic abnormalities goes up. It's just different kinds of genetic abnormalities. And the other interesting point that I want to make, one of the arguments people said, oh, yes, it's clearly Sarah Palin's daughter or child, excuse me, that because it had Down, the child does have trisomy 21, it does have Down syndrome, and therefore it had to be from an older woman. And that's not entirely true. So at the time that the rate or risk of having a Down's child as a live birth goes up, the fertility of women goes down. And so if you multiply those two together, what is the odds of a given woman giving birth to a child with Down syndrome? It's about the same for a young woman as it is for an old woman because young women have children at such a higher frequency than older women. And so you look at, I guess it's Bristol. I don't know the names.
Yes,
I can't even
Bristol
do.
Bristol is the pregnant one.
And it was. This is her first or second pregnancy. The question would be if trig. Oh my God!
I know.
I'm so ashamed of
everything. I named him after my favorite part of a gun.
So the odds of a Bristol or Sarah having a child with Down syndrome in a given year are about the same, statistically. And that's an interesting point that I do think it's important to make about that evidence – that's not evidence in one way or the other. You can do the testing. So I wrote a blog post saying that you can do this sort of testing. This is not difficult to do. It's very tightly related to paternity testing. And I actually worked out all the math how you could definitively rule out Sarah or Bristol as the mother of the child. So this is something that could be a verifiable – you know, fact one way or the other. I'm not really sure if it's materially relevant.
Yeah.
I think I'm much more concerned that Sarah Palin cannot articulate the answer to the question, when would you use nuclear weapons or nuclear weapons if we're going to make sure that everyone understands what we're talking about. I think that automatically disqualifies you from being president. But
what was her answer? Was it when the time is right?
I don't even want to know. I don't believe it was English. I think her words and sentences were not constructed in a manner which is compatible with the Western dialects that I am familiar with. Maybe it was a variant of Big Latin for which I am unfamiliar, but it was not a success in any way, shape, or form what we'd expect. But, you know, one of the other things that you can do, apropos of what your point is, if you do screening but you decided that you're definitively will not terminate a pregnancy, then knowing that you're going to have a child with Down syndrome 6 months before birth is incredibly valuable because many of the things that will ultimately result in the death of a child with Down syndrome are immediately related to the period right around birth. So there is a particular kind of heart defect. There's a particular kind. There are several sort of characteristic defects in the more severe cases of Down syndrome that if you know about, you can actually operate on while the child is still in utero, in the uterus.
Wow.
And correct. And when you think about it that way, the fetus is basically on bypass. The fetus is being supported by the mother. As you can do things like heart surgery without a severe consequence, and it's at a time where the heart can actually heal itself much better than after birth, or you can do the surgery right at the time of birth and know that this child is going to need emergency heart surgery.
Wow.
And all these things. Whereas if you don't screen, you don't know. And so again, even for a mother like Sarah Palin, presuming she wants to have the child survive and live and be as healthy as possible, regardless of whether or not it has Down, something like these prenatal testings and all this sort of options that are being that are available now to women thanks to modern technology would allow even someone like Sarah Palin, who is very opposed to termination of pregnancy, to have some ability to make this situation work out. Now, admittedly, you know, if you were told, and I believe she did have prenatal testing and opted against it.
The cynical thing was like, why would she have that if she
had no intention?
Right.
And the truth is there's
plenty of reasons you just gave right there that it changes the care of the fetus.
Absolutely. And you can dramatically increase the chance of survival of a fetus even with Down syndrome. And so but you don't do that by flying, what's it, to Texas and then giving birth. I mean, right. You don't necessarily want to be giving.
She had this high octane travel schedule, right? What, in her 8th month?
Yeah, and there's a tendency for premature. Eight months is not, particularly with modern medicine, is not exactly premature delivery. Like, that's very survivable again. But I mean, if I understood what goes on in Sarah Palin's head, I'd probably be waking up with more screaming nightmares than I do at this point. I'm not willing to say that she's a bad mother or all this, but it just seemed a little bit odd. And what frustrates me more, I mean, I'm content with her making her family choices in any way she sees fit. I don't have to live in that family. And so I'm perfectly content with her, you know, having two more, you know, as many shotgun weddings as she can possibly afford. You know, there's a lot of shells in Alaska, so I'm sure this can be done. But I am a little frustrated that she would want to take away these choices. It seems, to me, this seems, you know, again, I maybe this is the rational side of me, but I feel like you want to have the decision being made by the person with the best sense of what the consequences are going to be. I mean, there's more consequences to having there are a lot of consequences to giving birth to a child with a birth defect like Down syndrome, particularly in a country without universal health care, particularly in a country without sort of universal access to childcare, particularly in a country where, particularly when you're in a context of a family where you have several other children that you also have to take care of and you have two working parents, like most American families have to have in order to keep their head above poverty level and yada, 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 yada. I think at the end of the day, the person who's best able to sort of balance out all those risks with the ethical question about what's the ethics of terminating a pregnancy just because you come up positive on a test. And I want to emphasize this. These prenatal screens are just that. They're screen tests. And what screen tests are is you want to emphasize that you get a lot of false positives. That means is that you want it to catch virtually everyone who would have Down syndrome. All the fetuses would have Down syndrome. But it's probably going to catch a bunch that don't. And the idea then is if it comes up positive, then you go on to do much more involved testing that's more expensive and more maybe a little bit more invasive. But it's more definitive. And so you would never terminate on the basis of one screen test. I think that, and it was a big point that I think I want to emphasize. I don't want to make it sound like, you know, we'll terminate. We'll just try it again. And so what? It's only, and so, it's been an interesting season, hasn't it?
Well, I mean, you made that little distinction of like, I think I might be being too rational. And that's such a key part of understanding the motivations of the far right. Is like, it's this voodoo god thing they've got going on. This has nothing to do with rational thought. Like, the bottom line is, because God said so, so then all logic runs from there.
See, now, I grew up in a Jewish family, which is known for its yelling and rationality arguments over everything, including what we should eat for dinner. Now, I understand your fellow's family, at least part of it, is a little bit more on the – I mean, what has it been like? Like, how do you win an argument in that situation?
Oh, no, there's no arguments. Mormons – my partner's Mormon, or his family's Mormon. He's ex-Mormon. And they're just their plan is the Mormons is – what we consider life is just this waiting room for this eternal glory. So you're just supposed to be as clean and polite as possible during this waiting room period. So they're all very friendly and nice and feed me well, but give money to things that will take away my rights.
And this is maybe one of the latter points and we'll wind up in our politics and science and the horrible things in the world. The Proposition 8 in California. And let's talk about this just for a moment.
It's so nerve-wracking. Apparently, I'll get a letter in the mail that says, if it passes, it says, your marriage has been annulled.
David, that's really
I know. Makes me. I love getting the mail. It'll make me not want to get the mail. I know, it's so mean.
This is actually really, really makes me sad. not often where me get 300 words per minute out of my mouth can. That's very, very sad.
And the story I've been hearing now is that the push for Obama may actually work against Prop 8 because of Latinos and African Americans who are not particularly sympathetic to same-sex marriage who are coming to the polls because of Obama. And, you know, if it was up to me saying, you get one, you get either Obama or you get to stay married, of course I'll pick Obama. I mean, I'm going to stay married no matter what wins the popularity contest, you know. If my parents traveled across the country and wept in front of me, that means I'm married, no matter what the mail says.
Yeah.
But so that's it's a curious thing, though, that seems to be the hot new debate is like, will the turnout for Obama work against Prop 8?
And there's some data in Oregon is all mail-in early voting, right? And the data that's come out of that is saying that the turnout has actually been overall lower than expected. But it's been if you look at the breakdown in distribution, the turnout in like Red Rock liberal areas has been at absolute historical highs, and the turnout in like the eastern half. And for people who do not live in the Pacific Northwest, everything east of the Cascades in Oregon and Washington is basically West Idaho, and I would be in favor of it becoming a state named West Idaho and seceding from us. And the turnout has been historically low, and so so low that the overall mixture is actually skewed the electorate strongly towards the most left and liberal leaning. So this is David, this is what I'm going to give you in the last week. We're recording this 6 days from the election. I'll tell you this, is that the Central Valley, if this holds true, the Central Valley of California, I imagine, again, is sort of this cancerous growth down of eastern Washington and eastern Oregon. Hopefully those people will stay at home and look at the pigs and instead or asparagus and whatever else. And the polling, because the polling assumes the turnout to be about equal. They balance it out for that. And so this is the big question about it. But I throw in a little bit of science. There's absolutely positively no reason to – rational reason to deny gay people marriage rights. I mean this up and down. They've studied this. I mean, this is the kind of thing that's been a bugaboo. They study this. Same-sex parents do at least as good of a job as heterosexual parents at raising children, particularly given, in fact, a tiny bit better because there's no such thing as an unexpected pregnancy in a same-sex couple. At least among gay men, it actually does happen, and lesbians, but we're just going to let this go for a second. But even then, like, there is good parents, there's good neighbors, there's no credible evidence that being gay is a choice. There's quite a bit of evidence that having gay people in communities is a good thing and helps everyone, including those mixed sex couples that are under such beleagueredness apparently from it. And so, and I know this has sort of been repeated ad nauseum, but I'm going to repeat it again, and particularly on the eve of an election where half of some of the pollings believe half the population of California disagrees, is that there is no rational reason. It is pure, unadulterated bigotry to vote against this. And I'm going to say this with all of the empirical weight that I can throw at it. I've spent an inordinate amount of time writing about science for the stranger, reading about things pertaining to gay. this is what I would say about that. And maybe on that mixed note.
Thank you. Well, that's very yes. Thank you very much for that vote of support and fighting for my damn rights. I was also very excited by this the low turnout in the eastern part. I wonder if this just the idea that the historically klutzy Republican campaign has fostered this kind of ambivalence of people who, like, unless I really hate Obama, I can't even – I'm just not even going to do anything.
There's been the studies that have been done of bigotry, because it wasn't one of the arguments. If it was a crusty white man if it was a white man who had all of the characteristics of Obama – this would have been a runaway election a long, long time ago, right? I think one of the big things that sort of dragged, you know, that has made it as close as it has been is bigotry. I don't have a lot of evidence for that, except for maybe the anecdotal stuff and the videos from outside the McCain rallies, which are, yes.
Yeah, well, he's gotten it, like, for being, I mean, he's gotten all all points of beigeness attacks of he's an angry black man, he's an angry Arab, he's his and
funny name.
Yeah, the funny name. But God damn it, why did that have to happen?
But this is the interesting thing about it. So there's actually a researcher here at UW who studies bias, and University of Washington, UW, excuse me. I'm a dirty, dirty graduate student. I smell that right now also. They look at – so the bias right now, it's very rare in the United States to have someone who at least for African-Americans would outright out and out say, like, I believe they're inferior. Again, aside from the hardcore people who would actually show it to a McCain rally or a Palin rally at this point, the bias is much more at a deep sort of snap judgment level. And you can actually test this. You can actually – there's – and I'm not going to go into it. We've talked about this in a previous podcast and a – column and post and la-da-da. You can go have come back and search on it. But it's snap judgments. And so one of the things that Obama has sort of done is, you know, even people who would be like, oh, I'm not going to vote for this black guy. And then they hear him speak and they hear him speak and they hear him speak and they hear him speak. And even when McCain is quoting him or pointing to him and calling him, was it that one, you know, and all this stuff, you know, I think this is where Obama's temperament has paid off. He's very even, very calm, very deliberative. I mean, I think he won the election with his speech in the middle of September when the economic crisis finally happened. Where have you McCain basically blowing his top, you know, like first saying the fundamentals of the economy are strong. I'm going to give you a hint. I'm going to give a hint to any politician. Anyone who quotes Hoover on the eve of a massive financial collapse is probably not destined for electoral victory. But we'll put that aside. And then so he's saying that. And then he's immediately turning around and saying, like, you know, the economy's cratering. This is McCain. And then goes on and says he's suspending his campaign. And then he's going on and accusing Obama, you know, then he's going from being someone who's been lifelong in favor of economic, deregulation of the entire financial market, which directly led to this catastrophe twice, right? He did it once in the 80s and he did it again now for this one. And then he's like, now I believe in regulation, and Obama doesn't. And Obama is kind of like, I don't know how to put it. The guy's kind of gets buffeted like a super tanker gets buffeted. He imagined it would take a lot to turn him in a lot of ways. And so just by being calm and deliberative, I think people sort of snap biases sort of melt away. And it's not to say that if they then see a black man on the street, they're not – those same sort of snap judgments are going to come. But Obama is sort of already a known quantity. And God help me for saying this, but all those videos showing him with his really adorable pictures of him with his Caucasian grandparents, that also matters. And when it comes down to it, I think you put it exactly right, that a lot of people in these sort of places are like, you know, really not that frightened. I really don't hate him that much. How bad could it possibly be? We're going to knock on a lot of wood and we'll wait until the results actually come in. But that's just sort of my hope, is that people – that Obama, just by being so regular, people, you know, even people who are – again, this is how you sort of get rid of these sort of snap judgments. It's just sort of – being benign and all that. And with that, and are solving all the problems of the world in 20 minutes or less, I
think.
Thanks,
science.
Thanks, David. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening. Please send your science questions to dearscience@thestranger.com. You can read me at theslog.thestranger.com all of the time. I'm usually now writing about our coming economic doom and the delightful taste of Alpo, but I will be writing about science again soon. And with that, thank you again.
Bye.
Bye.